Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
We're currently down the rabbit hole of examining the anomalies of the Secret Service's protection of President Kennedy in Dallas. We've already looked at the drinking incident, the reduction of local law enforcement, the cutback in police motorcycles, the removal of the bubble top, the planning of the luncheon that the motorcade was driving to, the motorcade route itself, and last-minute changes in the order of motorcade vehicles and personnel. In this episode, we continue to address issues related to how the Secret Service handled security on November 22nd, including the speed of the presidential limo, rooftop security, the removal of agents from the rear of the limo, the threat research with the protective research section, and the presence of Army intelligence in the motorcade.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. One of the big disputes when it comes to the Secret Service is whether the driver of the presidential limo, Bill Greer, acted appropriately in Dealey Plaza. And no, I'm not talking about the driver shooting President Kennedy. We'll get to that allegation next episode. I'm talking about whether or not Greer stopped or slowed way down instead of getting out of the danger zone once the shots were fired. The Warren Report says, quote, "The presidential car did not stop or almost come to a complete halt after the firing of the first shot or any other shots. The driver, Special Agent William Greer, has testified that he accelerated the car after what was probably the second shot. Motion pictures of the scene show that the car slowed down momentarily after the shot that struck the president in the head and then speeded up rapidly." On the other hand, according to author and Secret Service expert Vince Palomara, there are at least 59 witnesses whose statements say that they saw the presidential limo either slow down to a near stop or come to a complete stop. The 59 witness statements on this topic make it clear that Agent Greer definitely hit the brakes when he should have been accelerating. The Secret Service typically maintained speeds of at least 20 to 30 miles per hour during motorcades. But in the Dallas motorcade, Greer was going about 11.2 miles per hour after making the 120-degree turn from Houston to Elm. From the Zapruder film and from witness statements, it looks like Agent Greer at least hit the brakes after the first shot was fired. Then, Greer turned around to look in the back seat at the president. At that time, Agent Roy Kellerman, Greer's superior who was sitting shotgun, told Greer to get out of line and hit the gas because the president had been hit. Inexplicably, Greer then turns around once more to look at the president a second time. President Kennedy was struck by the fatal headshot when Greer looked back for the second time. We don't know why Greer didn't put the pedal to the metal. Maybe it was nerves. We'll probably never know. But Greer failed to follow the direction of Agent Kellerman to get out of the motorcade line. If Greer had listened to Kellerman, it's possible that President Kennedy might have lived. In addition to Agent Greer having suboptimal performance in Dealey Plaza, the usual precautions that the Secret Service would take were noted by a reporter on the day of the assassination.
Normally, any vantage point, a rooftop, and windows which command a parade route are carefully scrutinized and carefully guarded, and men are usually posted on rooftops along a parade route, particularly if there is any reason at all to suppose that there might be someone in the area who would have such ideas as assassination in his mind regarding the president. These precautions, of course, are taken by the Secret Service for all presidents, as they have been for many years.
So, what exactly was the protocol? Luckily, we have two books written by higher-ups at the Secret Service shortly before the assassination. The chief inspector of the Secret Service, Michael Torina, wrote in a book that came out in 1962, quote, "If the president is to appear in a parade, agents and policemen are assigned posts atop buildings and on the street along the parade route. If exceptionally large crowds are expected, the Secret Service may call upon the armed forces to station troops along the line of march." Former Secret Service Chief U.E. Baumann wrote in his book, quote, "Every single building and all of its occupants along the parade route had to be checked. We had to have a dossier on each occupant sufficient to guarantee that he was safe. Only then could we grant him the privilege of viewing the parade from his window or rooftop. Both the President and First Lady would have been sitting ducks for a determined lunatic in a window, even if he were a relatively poor shot." Baumann added, quote, "It was always standard procedure for the Secret Service, through local police, to insist that building managers follow rigid rules to protect the President." Based on what Inspector Torina and Chief Baumann said, the rooftops and windows should have been guarded in Dallas. There should not have been any people in the windows of the Texas School Book Depository building unless they had been vetted. The building manager, Roy Truly, should have been contacted about this in advance by the Secret Service or the police, but that didn't happen. There's no mention of advance planning in either of Truly's two Warren Commission testimonies. It's one thing to have statements from the Secret Service about the proper way to do things, but what was the actual practice regarding rooftops and building windows in other cities around the time of the assassination? In Tampa, on November 18th, there were police or military stationed on the roof of every multi-story building along the motorcade route. The roofs of buildings were also guarded in San Antonio the day before the assassination and in Fort Worth on the morning of the assassination. Advance Agent Winston Lawson told the Warren Commission and the HSCA that he could not recall giving instructions to police to watch building windows, although it was his usual practice to do so. Dallas Police Captain Purdue Lawrence confirmed that Agent Lawson did not provide any instructions related to securing buildings or windows. With no pre-communication to building managers, as was the protocol, and with Agent Lawson failing to do as he normally did and request assistance from police to cover rooftops along the motorcade, the Secret Service was left to rely on Agent Emery Roberts in the follow-up car, who had the responsibility of scanning the windows and rooftops of buildings in front of the motorcade. Obviously, Agent Roberts did not succeed in his task. Dallas Agent Forrest Sorrells told the HSCA, quote, "During the time we were making this survey with police, I made the remark that if someone wanted to get the president, he could do it with a high-powered rifle and a telescopic sight from some building or some hillside, because that has always been a concern to us about the buildings." Agent Sorrells was also supposed to be on the lookout for people in rooftops or in windows of buildings from the back seat of the lead car. But since the lead car was a sedan with a roof, Sorrells' view was blocked and he wasn't able to do his job either. Even President Kennedy himself was worried about being shot from a window with a high-powered rifle. After the Florida trip, just days before he would be gunned down in Dallas, the president told his assistant, Dave Powers, that he feared an assassination, quote, "would be tried by someone with a high-power rifle and a telescopic sight during a downtown parade when there would be so much noise and confetti that nobody would even be able to point and say it came from that window."
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
One of the most obvious anomalies in the Secret Service detail is the removal of two agents from the rear of the presidential limo at Love Field. This incident has become famous because of a film where you can clearly see that Agent Henry Ribka was running alongside the left bumper of the presidential limo as it left Love Field, and Agent Donald Lawton was on the right bumper. By the way, no relation to Winston Lawson or HSCA lawyer Belford Lawson. In the film, Agent Lawton moves away from the rear of the presidential vehicle and throws his hands up in disgust three different times. After being ordered to stand down, Agents Lawton and Ribka remained behind at Love Field. The person who gave the order removing the agents from their positions at the rear of the limo was Agent Emery Roberts, who can be seen standing up in his seat in the follow-up car speaking to the men. It's clear from Agent Lawton's reaction that he was surprised by this decision and that he disagreed with it. But why did Emery Roberts make this last-second call to remove Agents Lawton and Ribka in the first place? According to Gerald Baines' April 16, 1964 report to Secret Service Chief James Rowley, President Kennedy, quote, told me that he did not want agents riding on the back of his car during several trips in 1961. While Bain was not on the Dallas trip, his statement does carry weight because he was the head of the White House detail. Other than Bain's report, the only firsthand evidence supporting the idea that the president did not want agents on the rear of the car comes from memos from Floyd Boring and Clint Hill, and a memo from Treasury Secretary C. Douglas Dillon, which said, quote, the president had frequently stated that he did not wish to have the gents riding on these steps during a motorcade and had repeated this wish only a few days previously to agents assigned to him in Tampa. Note here that Dillon does not claim that he personally heard this from the president. He says that agents heard it from the president, but he doesn't say who. Like the Warren report, the HSCA also believed that President Kennedy had specifically requested that the rear limo agents be removed. So we have a fair amount of evidence to show that President Kennedy did not want anyone on the rear of the limo. But are there any counterpoints to that assertion? Yes, there are many. Most notably, Gerald Bain and Floyd Boring, the two men who told the Warren Commission that they had personal knowledge that President Kennedy did not want any agents on the back of the car, were later interviewed by Vince Palomara. Bain told him, quote, I don't remember Kennedy ever saying that he didn't want anybody on the back of his car. Similarly, Floyd Boring told Palomara that President Kennedy was, quote, a very easygoing guy. He didn't interfere with our actions at all. Boring said that Kennedy didn't tell the Secret Service how to do its job. Additionally, Clint Hill, the only other remaining person who potentially had firsthand knowledge, said that he did not actually hear the president request the removal of agents on the rear of the limo. Instead, he testified to the Warren Commission that Floyd Boring told him about it. Advance Agent Winston Lawson wrote in a letter to Vince Palomara in 2004, quote, I do not know of any standing orders for the agents to stay off the back of the car. In addition to Bain, Boring, and Hill repudiating their earlier testimony, there are at least 30 other witnesses documented by Vince Palomara who are on the record saying that either President Kennedy did not give that order or that they did not personally hear President Kennedy give that order. In light of that, the weight of the evidence seems overwhelming that President Kennedy did not request that the agents be removed from the rear of the limo. To know how significant this last-second removal of security really was, we need to understand the protocol for such security. How common was it really for agents to ride on the back of the presidential limo? It was common enough for J. Edgar Hoover to mention it in a recorded call with President Johnson on November 29th.
You see, there was no Secret Service man standing on the back of the car. Usually, the presidential car in the past has had steps on the back next to the bumpers, and there'd usually been one on either side standing on those steps at the back bumper. Whether the president asked that not be done, we don't know.
Hoover couldn't speak to whether the president requested that the agents not be there. But as we just discussed, all of the agents who previously supported that idea later recanted it when speaking to Vince Palomara, or they clarified that they had never heard it themselves. In Tampa, days before, agents rode on the rear of the limo. But during that motorcade, Floyd Boring, who was present in the front seat for Tampa, told Emory Roberts to call the men off. The origination of the official story seems to come from Boring, who, again, later emphatically distanced himself from this claim. There is no mention in the final survey report of the November 18th Tampa trip of any directives from President Kennedy regarding agents on the rear of the limo. While this removing the agents from the rear of the limo business seems really shady, it's not a slam dunk to show malfeasance by the Secret Service. This is because agents were not always on the rear of the limo. Indeed, the agents did not ride at the rear of the limo on the other motorcade routes in Texas. Still, if you watch films from other motorcades, most often the rear agents are there in place. They were there about 50 to 75% of the time, according to Vince Palomara. Since we know that the reason for removing the agents is not credible in hindsight, it remains a real mystery why Agent Emory Roberts called off Agents Lawton and Ribka at Love Field. As we discussed in episode 59, there was a specific threat against President Kennedy from militant right-wing troublemaker Joseph Miltier. About 2 weeks before the assassination, Miami police informant William Somerset recorded Miltier saying that the best way to kill President Kennedy was, quote, from an office building with a high-powered rifle. This audio recording was sent by the Miami Secret Service to the head of the Secret Service's Protective Research Section, Robert Bauck. Bauck followed up by asking the local Miami agents to look into the matter more. But critically, Bauck did not pass the information about Miltier's threat onto the Secret Service in Dallas or anywhere else on the Texas trip. Bauck's failure to pass on the credible threat that was outlined by Miltier eventually led to Bauck being fired from his position as the head of the Protective Research Section. In addition to Bauck failing to pass the Miltier threat onto the Dallas Secret Service office, advance agent Winston Lawson told the HSCA that he affirmatively checked with the PRS before departing for Dallas, and there were no reports about any threats. Lawson also clarified to the HSCA that he was specifically asking about threat information, quote, on the basis of President Kennedy's visit to Texas for the funeral of Representative Sam Rayburn in November 1961 in Bonham, Texas, an hour and 15 minutes northeast of Dallas. In other words, Lawson found no threats based on JFK's brief visit northeast of Dallas 2 years earlier. Agent Lawson said that he learned of the Adlai Stevenson incident not from the PRS, but from reading it in the newspaper. In addition to the PRS threat check that was done by Agent Lawson, Assistant Special Agent in charge of the White House detail, Floyd Boring, also checked the PRS for threats twice. Agent Boring was in charge of the planning of the Dallas trip from Washington, but he wasn't present in Dallas. As we worked through the remaining cornucopia of Secret Service-related issues, it's important to understand that the agency did not bring their A-team to Dallas. Gerald Bain, the man in charge of the White House security detail, who would normally have been in charge, was on vacation for both the Texas trip and the Florida trip, which immediately preceded it. This was Agent Bain's first vacation in 3 years. Agent Floyd Boring, the number two man in charge of the White House detail, made the trip to Florida and oversaw advance work for Dallas. However, Boring stayed in Washington for the actual trip to Texas. With Agent Bain on vacation and Agent Boring in D.C., that left Agent Roy Kellerman to be in charge of the presidential security in Dallas. Agent Kellerman had only ever been in charge one other time, on November 8th and 9th, for a trip to New York. Thus, the third string lead of the White House detail was in charge on November 22nd and was on his second trip ever where he had the lead. Kellerman was the agent who was physically closest to President Kennedy. He should have climbed over Governor Connally and shielded the president after the first shot was fired. Instead, Agent Kellerman stayed in his seat. Another anomaly with the motorcade in Dallas was an unexpected visitor in the pilot car that day, Army Intelligence Officer Lieutenant Colonel George Whitmire. Whitmire told researcher Larry Happenin in 1970 that he was, quote, along for the ride because Dallas Police Deputy Chief George Lumpkin had invited him. Deputy Chief Lumpkin was also an Army Intelligence Reserve officer. Lieutenant Colonel Whitmire was Lumpkin's advisor in the Army. Just when you think the plot couldn't get any thicker, it turns out that Advance Agent Winston Lawson worked for Army Counterintelligence before joining the Secret Service. Agent Lawson told the HSCA he knew that Lieutenant Colonel Whitmire taught Army Intelligence, but that Whitmire's presence in the motorcade had nothing to do with Lawson's own prior service in Army Counterintelligence. Deputy Chief Lumpkin, the Army Intelligence Reservist, played a key role immediately after the shots were fired. He ordered the Texas Schoolbook Depository building to be sealed, and he was accompanied to oversee that order by Army Intelligence Lieutenant Colonel Whitmire. Deputy Chief Lumpkin is also the person who chose Marina Oswald's interpreter after the assassination. There were two other Army intelligence officers who happened to be in Dealey Plaza that day, James Powell and Edward Croyle. We covered James Powell in episode 4. Powell was a sergeant in the 112th Military Intelligence Division. His office was just blocks away from the Schoolbook Depository building. Powell said that he ran inside the Schoolbook Depository after the shots were fired to call his office and let them know what happened. Army Intelligence Officer Edward Croyle was the Army liaison to the Secret Service. Croyle spent the morning of November 22nd before the assassination with Oswald's FBI agent James Hostie and with ATF agent Frank Ellsworth. We certainly cannot prove that Army intelligence is nefariously involved based on this information alone. Yet, the fact that the Secret Service advance agent, one of the Dallas police who was central to the earliest moments of the investigation, and one of the people stuck inside the Schoolbook Depository when it was locked down, all have clear Army intelligence ties, is worth noting. So is the random protocol-breaking invite to Army Intelligence Lieutenant Colonel Whitmire to ride in the pilot car of the motorcade. Are these ties just a coincidence, or is there something else going on? Next time on Solving JFK, we'll spend a fourth episode covering the Secret Service, including allegations that Bill Greer and George Hickey fired shots at President Kennedy. After that, we'll wrap up this series and be joined for a recap and rebuttals episode by Secret Service expert Vince Paul Amara. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.